Radiolab is supported by the John Templeton Foundation, funding research and catalyzing conversations that inspire people with awe and wonder. Learn about the researchers making the latest discoveries in the science of well-being, complexity, forgiveness, and free will at templeton.org/podcast.
Radiolab is supported by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, exercising, cleaning. What if you could also be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average, and auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com, Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
Listener supported, WNYC Studios.
Oh, wait, you're listening.
Okay.
All right.
Okay.
All right.
You're listening to Radiolab.
Radiolab.
From
WNYC.
See?
Yep.
And NPR.
Are you ready?
Yes.
Feeling I'm full of worth?
I'm feeling full of value.
Well, in that spirit, I'm Jad Abumrad.
I'm Robert Krulwich.
This is Radiolab, and today...
three very different stories that try to put a dollar value...
Million is okay.
$1 million.
$7.
$10,000.
Yeah, I would say $5.
On things...
that seem...
priceless.
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 Priceless. Is it really...
Okay, so start at the top. So
bring
so,
on the pressure.
So tell. All right, we're going to start the show with a story from our producer Molly Webster.
I don't remember any of it.
Who we might actually want to rename Molly Wongster, because she recently got herself to some serious numericizing. Actually, it didn't start as a wonky thing. It started actually with some medical journals.
Yeah, that was interesting, because it was some of the most poetic writing I've seen out of doctors ever. One journal article said, like, what would one more month mean to a 37-year-old mother who has 4 children? Or what would one more month mean if you are a 67-year-old who's about to go traveling around the world? People were just kind of, like, drifting these questions out there where they were saying,
all these questions seemed to circle around a seemingly simple story of the pricing of a drug, a cancer drug.
And the story... if you really want to tell it from the beginning, it begins with this guy named Leonard.
Leonard Saltz. I'm a medical oncologist at Memorial Sloan Kettering Cancer Center.
Which is here in New York, and it's one of the largest cancer centers in the country.
I mean, we have 17 doctors here who treat colon cancer.
Just for colon cancer.
We treat a very large number of patients.
It's a huge hospital, and one of the things Leonard's been noticing in the last, I don't know, decade is cancer drug prices have just gone through the roof.
I mean, we have drugs out there that are many hundreds of dollars per pill.
Really?
Yeah. Oh, just wait. Let's see. Where does this start? It's June in 2012.
Mm-hmm.
Leonard Saltz is at a conference, and at this conference is a pharmaceutical company called Sanofi, and they give a presentation about a new drug that they have.
A drug called Zaltrap. And Zaltrap is a drug that, without getting into the science too much, targets the blood supply to the tumor.
It cuts off the blood supply, which means the tumor can't grow.
That's the scientific hypothesis.
So this new drug is presented, and they, like, present the data.
And they showed that the survival difference...
between the people who got Zaltrap and the people who didn't...
was 1.4 months, or 42 days.
In other words, if you take this drug, you could get 42 more days of life, on average, which means you could get 3 more days, you could get no days, you could get 42, or you could live another 3 years.
42
days.
Down to the yeah. Fine grain.
Oh, please. I could show you some graphs that have been put up at meetings that show survival curves calculated out to 2 decimal places in terms of months. So I'm looking
at
that's
like not a tenth of a month.
A hundredth of a month. That's a little over 7 hours.
What?
Pretty amusing, actually.
Wait, why would you?
It's pseudo-precision.
Pseudo-precision.
At any rate.
Anyways, after the conference, the FDA approves the drug. And basically, once the FDA approves the drug, public insurance has to take it, and then the private insurance companies just follow suit, which means you get prescribed the drug and people pay for it.
And what does the drug cost?
That's the thing.
It costs
roughly
30,000 for a 3-month course.
Wow.
So
Leonard's like, wow, that is expensive. And there was already another drug on the market, did the same thing, and it cost half as much. To put that in context, this is just one drug that's $11,000 a month. A normal cancer patient might take dozens of drugs.
There are anti-nausea medicines that are sometimes used that are in the range of $90 to $100 a tablet, and you take a tablet once a day for 3 days. One needs growth factors to help support the white blood cell count, which you sometimes need in chemo. Those can be $5,000 every 2 to 3 weeks. If you need antibiotics to treat infections, those aren't cheap. And then you need a pharmacist to prepare it. They're labor intensive. You need tubing and equipment and needles to give it. You need trained nurses to administer it. You need doctors to take care of the patients. And don't forget, there's a cost for a CAT scan or MRI. And then, of course, someone's got to pay for the real estate, the heat, and the lights. None of those prices are figured into it. Okay? I'm just giving you the cost of the drug.
So Leonard calls up one of his colleagues.
My name is Peter Bach. I'm a physician at Memorial Sloan Kettering.
Peter is the number cruncher of the group. He does the statistical analysis of, I don't know, the cost of care. And Len grabbed him and ran him through all the data.
And we walked through the out-of-pocket expenses for Medicare beneficiaries. Medicare beneficiaries, if they don't have additional insurance, 20 cents of every dollar they pay out of pocket.
And that number sort of hit him because he realized for Medicare patients, they'd be paying something like $2,000 out of pocket every month for just this drug.
It's $2,200, if I remember the number correctly.
For a lot of Medicare patients.
That's all of their money. Never mind other drugs. That's when I thought we should go public with it.
Memorial Sloan Kettering, they decide to boycott this drug.
Now,
I'm just stopping you because when you guys made that decision, was that, that feels like a big deal.
It did feel like a big deal, and it felt like a big enough deal that we decided to write the op-ed piece in the New York Times.
They write an op-ed in the Times that basically says, look, this is crazy, $11,000 a month for a drug that maybe gives you 42 more days of life?
Is that worth it? And a little less than a month after the op-ed piece came out,
the company that makes Zaltrap,
they went to individual doctors' offices, sent representatives, and said, we are offering a 50% discount.
They cut the price in half just like that?
Yep.
Nationwide or like just in this area?
Nationwide.
It was sort of incredible.
We reached out to Sanofi to talk about the price of Zaltrap, and they declined to comment. But in a statement that they released when this whole Zaltrap thing happened, they said that they incur so many costs for researching and developing and bringing a drug to market that that is what their pricing is based on. Leonard doesn't disagree.
We need these companies. They're the ones developing the drugs.
Which aren't easy to develop. I mean, Leonard gave us just one example.
If we talk about colon cancer.
He says for years, there was only one drug on the market called 5-FU.
5-FU was patented in August of 1957. It was from 1957 until 1996 that a second drug came along.
That's how long it takes to develop a good drug, or?
In that interim, there were over 70 drugs that were tried and failed.
I feel like I don't give it enough credit because that just astounded me.
It's very, very hard.
And that, according to Leonard, is one of the reasons why prices are just going to keep going up.
But sooner or later, this system is going to fall apart. And at what point does society say, there isn't an infinite number of dollars that we can commit to our healthcare system?
Mm-hmm. It's funny because I had this interesting reaction to the word society. Because all of a sudden I thought, like, why is, not like a, you know, crazy death panel way, but I thought, why is society involved in my conversation with my doctor about if I want to take this drug that may give me another month and a half of life?
Why is society involved? Because you're not paying. Unless you have hidden resources I'm aware of, probably couldn't afford $10,000 to $15,000 a month in drug bills. Someone else has to pay that.
Obviously, he says, it's your insurance. I mean, say you're part of a policy that has 1,000 members.
Let's say that the premium for that is $100. So we got $100, 1,000 people, we got ourselves $100,000.
Yeah.
Okay? So we now have $100,000 to take care of that 1,000 people.
For that month.
For whatever amount of time.
Yeah.
If now one person comes up with a healthcare cost, let's say it's for a month, that is $100,000 in that month, everybody else is in trouble. There's no money left.
So they write this op-ed saying, like, prices are too high and the drugs are not that great. And sort of the next, like, notable wave is there's this journal called Blood, which is really big to anybody that works in a community.
It's a
that
journal
has, like,
called Blood?
Yeah.
How did we not know about this when we made the Blood show?
Oh, I knew. Just kept it in here.
Anyhow.
So there's a journal called Blood, which is basically like the journal for anybody that works in a field that has to do with blood. And what happens is, like, 100 doctors get together and they co-sign an editorial, which basically says, we totally agree with everything you guys are saying, but we have an even bigger issue. You know, with Zaltrap, you're talking about an expensive drug that maybe doesn't really do that much. It's kind of easy, even though it had never been done before, to say, we're not going to use this. What all of these doctors in the Blood editorial are saying, what do you do when you have a really expensive drug, but it's really, really good? It's like a drug you actually want to take.
Is that like a one day in the future we will face this kind of question?
No, that is like a now, today question.
The most important new medicine approved this year.
Everyone I talked to pointed me to this new drug.
Called Sovaldi.
It's known as Sovaldi.
Sovaldi.
Why many in the medical community are calling the new medication
a blockbuster.
Sovaldi came on the market last December.
So that's December 2013.
That's correct.
This is Bruce.
Bruce Moll. I'm the editor of Commonwealth Magazine.
He's written about Sovaldi, and here's the basic story, right? It is a drug that treats
hepatitis C,
which is caused by a virus.
And the disease itself goes to work on your liver. It inflames it, it scars it.
It can cause liver cancer, cirrhosis, it can be fatal. And for the longest time, the treatments that they had just really weren't that great, or they just had wretched side effects. But along comes Sovaldi, and it's one pill, 12 weeks. You take it with some other antiviral meds. It is a super simple treatment option.
And the side effects are very minimal.
Like this, it was like kind of like the savior drug. And so a lot of doctors start to prescribe it.
In the first half of 2014, 70,000 people in the country, in the United States, were treated. And it had a 95% rate of cure. In other words,
holy cow,
the virus was
big.
Eradicated. That's very big.
But in fitting with our story,
this drug costs $1,000 a pill.
Whoa. For like one pill that I take?
One a day.
Which, as you can imagine, it angered a lot of people with Hep C. In total, it costs $84,000. And if you think about the fact that in 2014, we know at least 70,000 people got this drug.
Then you're starting to talk about serious money.
Wait, I just want to say that I just timesed out 70,000 times 84,000, and I got something with seven zeros in it. It's 588, and then there's seven zeros, which is like $5 billion.
Yes. Yeah.
The big question is how states will pay for what could be upwards of...
And so we have a situation where states are basically having to ration.
Yeah.
Say in Massachusetts,
most of the insurers currently are requiring some liver damage before you can take the drug.
Similar restrictions are happening in other states. Florida, it's happening in Oregon, Illinois.
The doctor says the only option may be to wait until you're even sicker.
And then there's Arizona. Out of the entire state, public insurance only approves 180 people for treatment.
Well, just 180?
Just 180. Now, when I talked to a representative of the company that makes the drug,
Greg Alton, Executive Vice President for Corporate and Medical Affairs for Gilead Sciences.
He says, you got to keep in mind, this is not a chronic care situation. This is a
cure. Here, you're actually curing a person of a disease. We're talking about 12 weeks of therapy, period. That's it. And you're done and you've cured somebody.
So he says, this is a one-time deal. This is like one time $84,000. And then you're done. Think about all the years you'll live without having an illness. Then you'll see.
Over a 20-year period, the savings that will accrue to the system by having a patient cured of hepatitis C.
He also said it's important to understand that every hepatitis C sufferer is not going to hit the system at the same time. So all of the cost is spread out, right? Which is totally true, but I think there's like this bigger picture here, and Bruce points it out too.
It's sort of like a precursor of what could come, because these companies are developing drugs all the time. What if you could get a drug, but it was very expensive to treat diabetes?
And then you're talking tens of millions of people.
An enormous segment of the population.
Even if just a fraction of them want a drug that's $1,000 per day, that's practically our entire U.S. budget.
What do you do in that case? A drug comes along like that and throws everything out of whack.
This is the part where I really sort of got hooked in, where it's like, how do you answer this question? Is it that, you know, at a certain point you just draw a line and you say, beyond this point, we're not paying.
But beyond what point?
Exactly. I mean, that's the hard part. Like, how good does a treatment have to be for you to say this is worth the price that it's been set at?
I don't think we reject it out of hand, but I don't think
I got into this a bit with Leonard. In the case of Zaltrap, they said, all right, 42 days, that much money, we're not going to do it. But would it have been different if it was 50 days or 100? Is that enough? I'm sure you want to be talking in years, but I guess the question is, like, what would be is there a magic line for you?
I can't personally determine it for everybody. I wouldn't presume to try. But ultimately, as a society, we're going to have to reach an understanding of what that cut point is, because we can't afford not to.
And the question that sort of bubbles right now, out of this conversation is, what is one more year or one more month or one more day of life worth to us?
Are we willing to pay $1,000 for an extra day of life? Well, what about $100,000 for an extra day of life?
You know, people like to say, yeah, so what's the value of a human life? And the answer is, boy, that's a complicated question, but a really important one, because nobody thinks it's infinite.
He said that, and I was like, okay, it's not zero and it's not infinite. Is there an answer like in the middle? And so I started looking around. I don't know. I guess I was wondering, has anyone actually thought about this? And so I started looking around, and what I realized was that the World Health Organization actually, I guess they almost have a number, but it's a number per country. They have the recommendation that countries spend, it's going to get gobbledygooky, but just bear with me.
Yeah.
The countries spend 1 to 3 times the GDP per capita, which is like the gross domestic product per individual.
So take the entire fat ball of money that is in a country and divide it per individual?
Divide it by the individuals, and then you spend 1 to 3 times that on one more good year of life.
And what would that be for us?
So for the U.S., that's about 50 to 150,000.
Interesting. And yeah. does that have any teeth? That recommendation?
It legally doesn't have any teeth, but it has teeth in the sense that doctors in the U.S. are actually going to start using this WHO number to evaluate medical treatments for cardiology. They said they were going to do this in a paper, and it was kind of very quiet, very subtle. But in other countries, this conversation is very loud, actually. It happens at the government level. They're also passing out surveys where they're asking citizens, what is your limit on how much you want to spend on one more good year of life?
Have they done that here? Ever?
As far as I know, no.
Why not?
Because the last time we tried to talk about cost in medicine, it ended up in the whole
death panels?
Death panels.
Death panels, or so-called death panels.
Thing. And I don't know, I just wondered.
Right, into the mess of it. Hey, Times Square.
If I actually tried to go out and ask this question in a very basic way, how would people respond?
Excuse me, can I ask you a question?
What is a year of life worth?
Wow, what a question.
That's deep. Can I think about it?
That's a tough one, but
I was really surprised at how seriously people took the question.
Man,
what is a year of life worth?
That was the first thing I noticed. Then the next thing was, no one could answer the question until I had answered like a million questions of theirs.
Am I going to die tomorrow?
Yes.
Where do I get that year? Do I get it at the beginning, the middle, or the end?
How would I spend that year of life?
Good. It would be a good year of life.
A good year of life depends.
Is this like a pie in the sky kind of answer?
They wanted to know, would they be emotionally happy, alone, with friends or family? Where did they get the money? Could they borrow the money? Did they have to pay the money back? Were they dying? Was it an emergency? Were other people also trying to get money at the same time? Because then there'd be like a rush on the money in America.
Oh, interesting. Did you actually ever end up getting numbers?
I did get numbers, but they were...
At least...
$10,000.
$15,000.
$13,000?
$250,000.
$7.
All over the place.
Yeah, I would say $5.
$10 million.
$44,000.
Interesting. One woman said $10
million. $10 million for a year? It's irresponsible.
Well, you're asking me about my personal choice.
$10 million?
Not about a public policy question.
What, do you have any way of parsing all this?
No. I honestly don't. Like, I think my biggest takeaway was, like, no one punched me, which makes me feel as if people are ready, not ready, but willing to engage in this conversation. But I also realized I kept talking about things and I just wanted to be in the room with patients. Like, yeah. I just wanted patients in the room with me because it was like we were all having this conversation that eventually we'll all be patients, I guess. But we were also having this conversation around... like a group of people that weren't ever present, like they're not at conferences or not in research articles. And so that was when I started talking to patients.
Ah, well.
I guess what does 42 days mean in the sense of, is that something that you'd pay $50,000 for if you were, I mean, of course you would. That it's like,
no,
I almost can't even ask the question, but I don't know.
Well, I think it's a good question. I think ethically it would be to the good of patients and doctors to have this conversation.
This is Susan.
Susan Gubar, writer of the Living with Cancer blog for the New York Times.
Back in 2008, Susan went to the doctor. She hadn't been feeling well for a while. They thought it was some sort of bowel issue. But then the doctor walked into the room and said she had
advanced stage ovarian cancer. Most ovarian cancers are diagnosed at a late stage, and it's basically incurable. It can be handled, it can be managed, it can be kept at bay, and for longer periods of time now, we hope. But you're given a diagnosis of 3 to 5 years.
Wow, that is, you go from having unlimited time in your mind to 3 to 5 years in like a doctor's visit.
Yeah, it's a big shock. You sort of enter a zone where you're not quite aware of what you're doing.
That day, the day she was diagnosed, she was told, pack a bag, get in a car, and drive to Indianapolis. You need surgery now.
So I went the next day to Indianapolis, and the day after that, I had the debulking surgery, which takes out the ovaries and the uterus and the fallopian tubes and the spleen and sometimes the cervix and sometimes the appendix and the bowel. And
are you serious?
Yeah. It's called the mother of all surgeries.
And then, just like that, she was doing multiple rounds of chemo.
Chemicals that are used, they destroy all quick-growing cells.
Okay.
So, for example, you have no hair, no eyebrows, no eyelashes, that you know. I got terrible sores in my mouth. I have no idea why, but I know this happens to other people. But yeah, the other thing is this extreme fatigue.
And Susan, who writes for a living, couldn't even read.
I would look at a page and think, had I turned a page? Chemotherapy, it really is toxic to the spirit, to the heart, to the mind. Just the normal aspects of life feel polluted.
Have you ever had to think about cost?
I was never informed of the cost of any drug or any procedure I was given, which really makes me think about how masked these costs are.
Would you want to be thinking about cost while you're going through it, or is it better to just say, here are your treatment options, these are statistical outcomes, like pick one, and then we'll deal with it on the other side?
I think there's a kind of unspoken agreement among everyone that the insurance company or Medicare is going to pay. And if it's the government, that means our grandchildren are going to end up paying. for all of this money. So yes, I guess to answer your question, I think it would be healthier to know what these things cost. On the other hand, I have to say as a patient, I was so traumatized, I'm not sure I could have taken that information in. I was thinking about your what it's worth, what's it worth title, and I was thinking that the American individualistic, optimistic response would be, well, whatever it takes. Whatever it takes. Life is worth it, whatever it takes. But whatever it takes will not cure my cancer. So I think this question changes when you have incurable cancer. It becomes a different question, which is, when is enough enough?
I remember when she said that, when is enough enough? I was just...
I don't know that we are ready to say there's one magic line.
Thrown back to this conversation that I had had with Leonard Saltz, where he was saying that...
We have to look at everything in terms of value.
You need to think deeply about the kind of life you want to live. It's not just about how many days, it's about what kind of days.
So if you told me that there was something that gave 72-day survival benefit, but it makes people feel nauseous for most of the time, is that worth it?
When we're trying to draw this line as a society, before we figure out what we're willing to pay, we have to think about what we are paying for.
Yeah, I don't think we know what...
For Susan, you know, 6 years ago, she decided that she was going to get chemotherapy because, in part, it would be more time with her daughters.
Yeah.
And suddenly, it's worth it.
Yeah, but I think we're changed by the treatment, too.
For now, Susan's cancer is basically under control because she's on this new drug.
For two years and now a month, and I am counting.
Okay, fair.
I've been alive without a recurrence, without the cancer growing, by taking these pills every day.
Mm-hmm.
And I take them at home. They're not infused in the hospital through my veins. They're just pills. And it's made the last few years remarkably normal-like, the new normal.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But when these drugs stop working, and I've been told they will stop working, I'm not sure I would want to go back to chemotherapy. But I suspect I don't know until I get there.
Producer Molly Webster.
And now for the thank yous for that piece. We want to thank Stephen Hall, and we want to mention Susan Gubar's book called Memoir of a Debulked Woman.
And thanks also to Dr. Atul Gawande for all his help and his latest book.
Which is really, I really thought it was wonderful. It's called Being Mortal.
Yeah. And thanks also to Nikki Haynes.
And to Glenn Blomquist.
Radiolab will continue in a moment.
You have two new messages. Message one.
Hi, this is Susan Gubar.
Hi, this is Bruce Moll.
Attempting to read what you sent to me.
Here goes. Radiolab is supported in part by the Alfred P. Sloan Foundation.
Enhancing public understanding of science and technology in the modern world.
More information about Sloan at www.sloan.org.
Radiolab is produced by WNYC.
And distributed by NPR.
End of message.
Radiolab is supported by the John Templeton Foundation, funding research and catalyzing conversations that inspire people with awe and wonder. Learn about the researchers making the latest discoveries in the science of well-being, complexity, forgiveness, and free will at templeton.org/podcast.